everyone. Welcome to Divided Kingdom. This is Lou Caverly, your host. And here it is. We're past the midpoint of the month of February 2026. And as I look out my window, it's pretty much bare ground here, but winter's not over yet, and some of our biggest snowstorms have been in late February. So we'll see what develops. But today's a pretty nice day, a little cloudy in here in eastern Maryland, but not bad. Let's start off with something a little on the humorous side today. This is from Fox News, February 17th. Man makes an insanely stupid decision with massive moose. Is lucky to not be seriously hurt. And this took place at Jackson, Wyoming. Beautiful part of the country. Never been there, but I've seen beautiful pictures. And this had an accompanying video, which, of course, I can't show you over the radio. But if you go to Fox News, you can probably track it down. And this is by David Hookstead. And although it's published by Fox News, it actually came from Outkick. It's truly stunning how dumb some people can be with wild animals. We have a long history here at Outkick of chronicling people behaving in shockingly stupid fashion with wild animals. You'd think after so many videos have gone viral and resulted in endless roasting and mocking, the people would wise up. Well, some new footage proves that's not even close to happening. And the subtitle says, man uses bear spray on moose for seemingly no reason. And it says the popular Instagram page at Tour on Soft National Parks, which that's what it looks like. It says T-O-U-R-O-N-S-O-F, and then the words National Parks. Recently, that person shared a video that has to be seen to be believed. A man was filmed shockingly close to a pair of moose, and that's when he decided to start swinging some bear spray at the massive wild animals. A witness claimed the man was angry because he was unable to take a morning walk due to the location of the moose. A level of stupidity that is hard to comprehend. Give it a watch below and let me know your thoughts at david.hookstead@outkick.com. Well, you can do that if you want. As I say, I can't show you the video over the radio waves, but if you go to Fox News, it's dated February 17th. You may be able to hook up to it. Going on with the article, people might not think moose are incredibly dangerous animals, but that thought could get you seriously hurt. Moose are gigantic. A bull moose can easily weigh more than 1,000 pounds, and they will absolutely get aggressive if they feel threatened. Good luck fighting a wild animal that is 5 times your size. Even if they won't tear you apart like a grizzly bear, a moose will still do a ton of damage. Furthermore, why would anyone ever instigate a situation with an animal out in nature? It's one thing if you have to take defensive measures because your life is in imminent danger. It's a completely different situation if you decide to approach a wild animal. And it says at the bottom, David Hookstead, and that's spelled, by the way, H-O-O-K-S-T-E-A-D, is a reporter for Outkick, covering a variety of topics with a focus on football and culture. And he gives a few other details. He's a graduate of the University of Wisconsin. So if you want to read about the moose, Fox News, February 17th, 2026. All right, now we'll move on to some more serious subjects. You're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. This is a radio show that my late wife Elizabeth and I began quite some years ago now, and I've been continuing it since her death a year ago, just a few days ago, on February the 16th, 2025. And if you want to write to us, well, to me now, you can write to me at Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And I'll repeat that. I'll repeat that a little bit later in case you didn't have a pencil and paper handy. Now, a little more serious note. As many of you know, Elizabeth and I wrote a book about the bad side of the COVID vaccines. Well, let me think now. I guess it's been about 3 years ago now. I still have two or three of those books left if you write to me. And I'll give that as address again in a few minutes. I can send you out a copy of the book for free. And if you could just put a little money in to cover the postage, that would be much appreciated. But the supply of the books is strictly limited. It'll have to be first come, first serve. As I said the last week or two, there was a listener who I think was from Colorado, if I remember rightly. I don't have it in front of me. And when I sent the books to him, he asked for two, and I sent two. It came back to me as saying they were not deliverable. They couldn't deliver them to the address. And as I recall, there might have been two addresses, one on the outside, the return address for the envelope, and one, a different one on the inside. I guess I picked the wrong one. So if you will write to me, if you're listening, I will be glad to send those books back to you. Just give me the correct address. And anyone else, like I say, first come, first serve. We may be down to as few as three books, maybe four or five possibly. But if you write to me, just say, please send me your book. I'll be glad to get it out. Just make sure the return address is legible and present on your letter. All right, now, talking about vaccines, here's the latest thing that came out Monday, February 16th, 2026, at LifeSite News. The title, Rand Paul Introduces Bill to Repeal Vaccine Liability Shield from Big Pharma Corporations. And the subtitle says the bill would eliminate the general immunity vaccine manufacturers have enjoyed for nearly 40 years and allow families to pursue civil lawsuits for redress due to injuries or death. This again was LifeSite News by Patrick Delaney, February 16th. Last Wednesday, Republican U.S. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky introduced legislation that would eliminate long-standing liability protections shielding vaccine manufacturers from civil lawsuits in the United States due to injuries or deaths caused by their products. While federal data show more than 1.6 million such injuries or deaths, reports from vaccines, a 2010 Harvard study reveals these figures represent only an estimated 1% of actual injuries. And let me just interject then, that means that although the data shows 1.6 million such injuries, multiply that by 100. If that's only 1% of the total, we're talking 160 million injuries. Now, back to the article. Co-sponsored by Republican U.S. Senator Mike Lee of Utah, the legislation, Senate Bill 3853, is titled A Bill to Amend the Public Health Service Act to End the Liability Shields for Vaccine Manufacturers and for Other Purposes. It was introduced on February 11th and referred to the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. Though the current text of the bill has not yet been officially published, it is described as a companion bill to H.R. 4668, which Republican U.S. Representative Paul Gosar of Arizona introduced last summer, entitled End the Vaccine Carve-Out Act. This bill would allow individuals to, quote, bring a civil action against a vaccine administrator or manufacturer in a state or federal court for damages arising from such injury or death, unquote. This would eliminate the general immunity vaccine manufacturers enjoy under the federal National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986 and allow for civil actions to be pursued regardless of whether a victim has filed a petition with the program. And it goes on with some other details. Let me get to the heart of the matter here. Under the sweeping, that word is in quotes, sweeping immunity, CRS, That would be the Congressional Research Service, to explain. The federal government, state governments, manufacturers and distributors of COVID countermeasures, and licensed or otherwise authorized health professionals distributing those countermeasures are shielded from all claims for loss coming from those countermeasures, with the exception of death or serious physical injury brought about through willful misconduct. A standard that, among other hurdles, requires the offender to have acted, quote, intentionally to achieve a wrongful purpose, unquote. There's a large body of evidence against the safety of the COVID vaccines that were developed in record time under the first Trump administration's Operation Warp Speed initiative. The 1,673,000 some odd vaccine injuries recorded on the Federal Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS for short, include almost 39,000 deaths, roughly 222,000 hospitalizations, 22,454 heart attacks, and 29,131 myocarditis and pericarditis cases as of January 2nd, among other ailments. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, researchers have recognized a high verification rate, this is in quotes, high verification rate of reports of myocarditis to VAERS after mRNA-based COVID-19 vaccination, leading to the conclusion that underreporting is more likely than overreporting. And there's some technical things here. Let me skip down a little bit. An analysis of 99 million people across 8 countries published in the journal Vaccine, quote, observed significantly higher risks of myocarditis following the first, second, and third doses of mRNA-based COVID vaccines, as well as signs of increased risk of pericarditis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, and cerebral venous sinus thrombosis, and other potential safety signals that require further investigation. In April 2024, the CDC was forced to release, by court order, 780,000 previously undisclosed reports of serious adverse reactions. And a study out of Japan found statistically significant increases in cancer deaths after third doses of mRNA-based COVID-19 vaccines, offered several theories for a causal link. Well, the rest of this is rather technical, so I won't read it at length. Just read the concluding paragraph here. Last December, Dr. Michael Yeadon, Yeadon, a former Pfizer vice president and chief scientist for allergy and respiratory, released a statement testifying that, based on his extensive training and vast experience, one can know with certainty that the COVID-19 injections were intentionally, quote, designed to cause injury, unquote, and reduce fertility. Well, that concludes the article. Let me just say that this is one of the few things where a company can cause harm and not be held responsible in any way. So it seems to me to make sense. And I realize that this law was put into effect to basically encourage companies to create new vaccines. So at the time, it probably seemed like a good idea. But in light of all the trouble that's been caused by the COVID vaccines, which we, Elizabeth and I, documented in our book, it's no wonder that Senator Rand Paul is introducing this bill, and I hope it goes far and eventually becomes law. Again, this is from LifeSite News by Patrick Delaney, Monday, February 16th, 2026. Well, what else do we have? A little different topic now. And let me just interject, too, if you'd like to write to me, Love to get comments. I don't give very many comments. Do get some that say, doing a good job. But if there's something more specific, feel free to write to me. Again, my address is Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y. The post office box is P.O. Box 28, and the town is Bethlehem, Maryland, zip 21609. Now, another one from Whiteside News. You may have heard about this mass shooting at a school in Canada. And this addresses that issue. This was just probably about a week ago. I don't see a date here, but I know it was quite recent. The title says, Tumblr Rich Massacre Forces Canada to Confront Gender Ideology's Deadly Consequences. This is by Jonathan Van Maren, February 13th, 2026. And the subtitle says, Tumblr Ridge Massacre Forces Canada to Confront Gender Ideology's Deadly Consequences. I believe I read that already. But the subtitle says, 8 people are dead, yet Canadian national media remain focused on pronouns. Ignoring the mainstream media is now the only way to know what is really happening in the country. Again, Lifesite News, Jonathan Van Maren. The tragedy on Wednesday, so that would be, most of you who hear this on Thursday evening or Saturday, would be a little more than a week ago. The tragedy on Wednesday in British Columbia, in which an 18-year-old shooter killed his mother, his 11-year-old stepbrother, a teacher, 5 children, and injured over 25 before committing suicide, has exposed the fact that the transgender movement has divided Canada into 2 solitudes. If you get your news primarily from the mainstream press, you will be under the impression that a gun person, that's in quotes, a gun person, later identified as Jesse Van Rootseller, a young woman, opened fire in her small community. The CBC, that would be the Canadian Broadcasting Company, the Toronto Star, the Vancouver Sun, DTV, Global News, the Globe and Mail, the Winnipeg Free Press, the Ottawa Citizen, the Montreal Gazette, and others all referred to the shooter as female. Those Canadians who can translate the news could have figured out what happened. That is, those who know that a transgender woman is not in fact a woman, and that born biologically male means male, the truth was disguised under a layer of ideological propaganda and had to be excavated. The CBC interviewed the shooter's father and went so far as to note and correct the father's use of male pronouns. In his statement, Justin Van Rootseler refers to his child as Jesse Strang and uses he-him pronouns to describe her. According to police, Jesse Van Rootseler was assigned male at birth and began transitioning to female about 6 years ago. In fact, the media has almost universally identified the shooter as Jesse Van Rootseler, but that too has turned out not to be accurate. As Juno News, the independent outlet that identified the shooter long before any mainstream media outlet had the facts, spoke with the shooter's father first. Justin Van Rootseler stated unequivocally that he had a passport and the name on it is not Van Rootseler. The mainstream press has lost a lot of power now that X and other sites permit the truth to be published. But their ability to shape a collective narrative is still tremendously powerful. As one activist noted on X, quote, just talking to Dad, and he remarked how unusual it is that the Canadian mass shooting was carried out by a woman. Every journalist who has caused this should never work again. Every news agency putting it out there should be bankrupt, unquote. In fact, the only way you could get the straight news without translating deliberately murky ideological language is if you were following one of the activist news outlets, with Juno News spearheading, breaking coverage on this particular story. Some international outlets also accurately reported Jesse Strang's sex. When the Telegraph broke the story that Strang might have come to the school to kill the rest of his family, his siblings attended Tumbler Ridge High School, the eyewitness referred to the shooter with male pronouns. So did all the neighbors and other residents of Tumbler Ridge who spoke with the reporter. In short, those who live in the town are explaining what they saw. The media is reporting what trans activists have ordered them to see. The mainstream press is working hard both to ensure that the late killer's pronoun preferences are respected, but also that his transgender identity doesn't lead to any questions about the intersection of gender dysphoria and mental illness. As I noted, and this is the words of Jonathan Van Maren, the author, as I noted in the European Conservative yesterday, the CBC and the City News Halifax kicked it off with long articles attempting to debunk any connection between transgenderism and violence. But immediately, nearly every media outlet followed suit, including the Coast Reporter, Canadian Press, CTV News, The Times Columnist, Globe and Mail, Winnipeg Free Press, and more. Foreign news outlets such as The Spectator are permitted to ask questions about the connection between trans identities, mental illness, and violence, but Canadian outlets cannot, as the New York Post put it. Yet, when journalists knowingly disguise biological reality and gloss over the link to mental health, they don't just mislead readers. They actively interfere with our ability to understand reality and therefore assess danger. For the years, the public has been told that identifying as the opposite sex is simply another harmless expression of one's self-identity. Questioning it is dangerous, cruel, bigotry. Exploring whether transgender identity may signal deeper psychological distress is forbidden. Professionals who dare to raise concerns are threatened with loss of their licenses, professional reputation, and livelihood. That dogma has consequences, as another community has learned the hard way. Let's admit it. Believing you are the opposite of your biological sex is simply not a normal or neutral position. It's quite likely often a sign of some kind of psychological distress, perhaps accompanied by depression, dissociation, autism spectrum disorders, self-harm, suicidal ideation, and extreme social isolation. That doesn't mean every person with gender dysphoria is violent or even deeply sick, but it does mean that when young people are spiraling, we shouldn't ignore the signs, or worse, affirm their delusions. Alas, mental health professionals insist we do just that. Let me interject here. This is Luke speaking. I believe that LifeSite News is a Canadian publication, and therefore the author here, Jonathan Van Maren, has more than just a little interest in this particular story, being in his own country. Now, going on with the article, but in Canada, we are not permitted to have that discussion. The mainstream press, with the exception of the National Post, initiated a near-total reporting blackout when the Cash Review, which resulted in a permanent ban on sex change treatments for minors in the UK, was published. Backtracking by major American organizations on so-called transitions for minors, such as the American Medical Association, have also been ignored. In Canada, if someone claims to be trans, the law dictates that medical professionals affirm, that families get in line, that schools facilitate. And if the gender-confused minor wants body-affirming therapy to feel comfortable with their sex, too bad. Trudeau's Bill C-4 dubbed that conversion therapy, and it's illegal. So when Jesse Strang moaned that he wanted to be a petite girl, that's in quotes, petite girl, that was not, as every previous generation of Canadians would have recognized, clear evidence of mental disturbance. It was evidence of his transness, which needed to be immediately and unequivocally affirmed. Even after he perpetrated a mass murder and killed himself, trans activists are there to ensure that his pronouns are posthumously respected. What happened in Turner, of Tumble Ridge on Wednesday, a young man killed his mother, his little stepbrother, five children, and a teacher. But only Canadians who are willing to ignore the mainstream media will actually know that. It's a hard-hitting article from LifeSite News, dated Friday, February 13, 2026, by Jonathan Van Maren. All right, something a little less, what should we say? Well, no, I guess it's not a little less controversial. It's pretty controversial. Here's something from the Gateway Pundit. Bombshell. Pam Bondi announces all Epstein-related materials released. Pelosi, Obama, Newsom, Biden, and other Democrats named in the files. Here is the complete list of 300-plus individuals. By Jim Hoft, February 15, 2026. Again, from the Gateway Pundit. Well, obviously, I'm not going to read and put you to sleep by reading 300-plus names. In fact, I didn't even print that out. Didn't want to use up all my toner. But it's there. If you go to their website, thegatewaypundit.com, you'll find all the names. And the subtitle says, Attorney General Pam Bondi has officially transmitted to Congress the Department of Justice's Section 3 report under the Epstein Files Transparency Act, confirming that the DOJ has now released all Epstein-related materials in its possession. The February 14th, 2026 report addressed to Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley, Ranking Member Dick Durbin, House Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan, and Ranking Member Jamie Raskin confirms that the department has released all the files. The letter read, quote, in accordance with the requirements of the Act and as described in various department submissions to the courts of the Southern District of New York, assigned to the Epstein and Maxwell prosecutions and related orders, the department released all records, documents, communications, and investigative materials in the possession of the department that relate to any of nine different categories. The department released materials, this is against the Department of Justice, released materials tied to the following nine categories. One, Jeffrey Epstein, all investigations, prosecutions, and custodial matters. Two, Ghislaine Maxwell. Three, flight logs and travel records, aircraft manifests, itineraries, customs records, vessels, vehicles used by Epstein or related entities. Four, individuals named in connection with Epstein's criminal activity, civil settlements, immunity deals, plea agreements, or investigations. Five, entities, corporate, nonprofit, academic, governmental, tied to Epstein's trafficking or financial networks. Six, immunity deals, non-prosecution agreements, plea bargains, sealed agreements involving Epstein or associates. Seven, internal DOJ communications regarding decisions to charge or decline prosecution. Eight, communications regarding destruction, deletion, or concealment of evidence. And nine, documentation of Epstein's detention and death, including incident reports, witness interviews, and autopsy files. And the Department of Justice stated, quote, no records were withheld or redacted on the basis of embarrassment, reputational harm, or political sensitivity, including to any government official, public figure, or foreign dignitary, unquote. The only materials withheld were those protected by traditional legal privileges, such as attorney-client or deliberative process privilege. Bondi's letter, that would be Pam Bondi, the Attorney General, her letter also details the redaction process. According to the report, redactions were limited to victim personal and medical information, child sexual abuse material, information that could jeopardize active investigations, and graphic images of death or abuse. No classification-based redactions were used. Unredacted versions are available for congressional inspection at the Department of Justice. The pages are sticking together here. Bear with me. The letter includes a list of more than 300 high-profile names. The list is a who's who of the liberal elite and establishment figures, including Barack and Michelle Obama, Joe and Hunter Biden, Kamala Harris, Hillary Clinton, and Bill Clinton. Bill Gates. And yes, Nancy Pelosi and Gavin Newsom make the list. The DOJ states that the following individuals were included because their name, quote, appears in the files released under the act at least once, unquote, in any context. The department cautioned that names appear across a wide variety of contexts, including emails, press mentions, third-party reporting, peripheral document references, and that some individuals are mentioned, quote, only in a portion of a document unrelated to the Epstein and Maxwell matters. And then they gave the full name index as listed in the DOJ report. So if you want to go to the Gateway Pundit and see all the names, you can. But I think it just goes to show you that you got to be careful what you wish for. The Democrats have been pounding the Department of Justice to release everything about Epstein, and now a lot of Democrat names are listed on that publication. Again, that was the Gateway Pundit by Jim Hoft, February 15, 2026. All right. Well, now, let me see what we have here. By the way, if you'd like to look at our website, now I guess you could say it's my website, you can go to DividedKingdomRadio.com. All one word, DividedKingdomRadio.com. And you can listen to past shows. You can see some of our essays. I need to put some new ones in there. I must admit, that's Elizabeth Steff. I really haven't updated the essays very much. But I've had some things in my mind that I'm going to get put in there quite soon. So, you'll find some interesting things there. A little tribute to Elizabeth, if you've never read that, that I wrote some months ago after her passing. Well, what else do we have? Hillary Clinton. He never seems to disappear from the limelight. Here's something from Fox News. Clinton faces backlash from the left after calling mass immigration disruptive. The strategist argued Democrats should not play into the debate on who is the biggest deporter. And this is by Alexander Hall, Fox News, February 17, 2026. A Democratic strategist publicly disagreed with the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's statement that mass immigration has gone too far in recent years. Democratic strategist Maya Rupert, that's M-A-Y-A, Rupert, criticized former Secretary of State Clinton on MS Now on Monday, saying her recent comments on mass immigration are not helpful to the Democratic Party. Now, let's check this. Some would say that the mass immigration itself is what's not helpful. But let me read on. While in Germany for the Munich Security Conference, Clinton participated in a panel titled The West-West Divide, What Remains of Common Values? During the panel, Clinton surprised many of her Republican critics by admitting how much of an issue mass illegal immigration had become during President Biden's term in office. One of the most widely quoted estimates, including by border czar Tom Homan, is that 10 million illegal immigrants crossed the border during Biden's term in office. And here we have a quote from Mrs. Clinton. Quote, it went too far. It's been disruptive and destabilizing, and it needs to be fixed in a humane way with secure borders that don't torture and kill people, and how we're going to have a strong family structure because it is at the base of civilization. civilization. And she added, well, that's what she added. That's the end of her quote. Her comments quickly went viral online, but were criticized during a panel on MS Now's Chris Jansen reports. And let's see, we have words from Ms. Rufik. Well, I appreciate Secretary Clinton, but I think, honestly, it is a mistake for Democrats to adopt that sort of positioning. And I think, really, Republican talking points around immigration, I think that it's not a matter of did it go too far. There was a point at which we talked about immigration as a holistic thing. It was a comprehensive system, unquote. End quote. The Republicans were successful in getting us to talk about it only in terms of enforcement. So we're only talking about deportation, she continued. But the fact that we sort of conceded the point that there should be a way for folks who have been living in the country, who are working, who are part of the engine that drives the economy and the fabric of communities, that there should be a way for people to get citizenship, when that conversation went away, that was around the time we started seeing more chaos around the border. Those things aren't disconnected, unquote. Once again, those are words of Ms. Maya Rupert, who was a Democratic strategist. And she suggested Democrats use the current debate surrounding immigration to, quote, reorient the conversation, unquote, and address the issue of illegal immigration humanely. She said, I think that we make a mistake when we just sort of paint over all of that and focus on who was the biggest deporter and were they able to do it humanely. That's not all of our immigration system. Well, those of you listening, I believe I'd have to read that over four or five times to figure out what she's saying exactly. Sounds like she's evading the issue, as Democrats like to do. Well, I guess all politicians like to do that, for that matter, not just the Democrats. But I think the Democrats are particularly good at that. And it says in the article, old clips of Clinton and Obama talking about immigration enforcement resurfaced. The one clip that featured Obama had him defending his deportation and immigration enforcement in 2010. And in a 2008 clip, Clinton and now is this Bill or Hillary? I guess this would be Mrs. Clinton. She appeared to back strong border security and penalties for those who illegally cross the border. And here's a quote from her. I think we've got to have tough conditions. Tell people to come out of the shadows. If they've committed a crime, deport them. No questions asked. They're gone. If they've been working and are law-abiding, we should say, here are the conditions for you staying. You have to pay a stiff fine because you came here illegally. You have to pay back taxes. And you have to try to learn English. And you have to wait in line. Unquote. Wow. That doesn't sound like the leftist of today, does it? That was 2008, 18 years ago. Well, anyway, that was from Fox News. So, if you speak a little bit of the truth, sounds like you're going to get a backlash. Fox News, Clinton faces backlash from the left, etc. By Alexander Hall, February 17th, 2026. Well, maybe Mrs. Clinton is making sense after all. But then again, maybe not. Because here we have from the Gateway Pundit, this is actually a video, but there's a good summary in print as well. Hillary Clinton rails against white men, that's in quotes, white men, and MAGA, an angry rant during Munich panel, claims children weren't detained under Obama and Bill Clinton. Again, this is the Gateway Pundit. Jordan Conradson, February 15th. During a discussion on international relations and mass migration at the Munich Security Conference on Saturday, failed presidential candidate Hillary Clinton went on an angry-sounding rant about black people, women, and gay people's rights, accusing conservatives of being concerned about equal rights and supporting inhumane border policies. I wonder if that's a misprint there. maybe it seems, maybe it should say accusing conservatives of being unconcerned about equal rights. That would make more sense. But going on, Clinton began by lecturing European leaders about the United States history with women, blacks, and gays, and saying the liberals are, quote, comfortable in a more open, tolerant world, unquote. While conservatives, quote, have their concerns about it because they worry about the impact on existing institutions, like the family, community, and others, unquote. He then turned to immigration, accusing the Trump administration of taking too harsh of an approach against the violent criminals who invaded the country, and she repeated the kids in cages hoax, blaming Trump for the child separation policy for minors crossing the border with unknown adults. And this is a quote from Mrs. Clinton. More people were deported under my husband and Barack Obama without killing American citizens and without putting children into detention camps, Clinton said, ignoring the unprecedented violence against ICE agents today and that putting detained children at the border is a longstanding policy. I should say putting detaining children on the border is a longstanding policy. And she went right back to race baiting and virtue signaling and even made herself the victim, accusing the right of an, quote, ideological impulse to try to protect the status quo or return making America great again in some nostalgic past that existed for white men and capitalist enterprise, unquote. Which, quote, was not exactly open and welcoming to people who look like me and a lot of other people who are part of our national fabric, unquote. Let me interject. I guess she's talking about women. People who look like me, I guess she means women. She did, however, admit that immigration has gone too far and that it's been disruptive and destabilizing. Now, I won't put you through the torment of having to listen to her, part of her speech. If you want to see it, there's a really extensive quote that runs to more than a whole page on this website, Gateway Pundit, February 15th. Look for the article entitled, Hillary Clinton Rails Against White Men and MAGA, an Angry Rant, etc. Well, there's a little of the old Hillary showing up. Now here's something. We just hit President's Day a few days back. When I was a boy, we had Washington's birthday on the actual day, February 22nd. And then there was Lincoln's birthday a few days before. But now we have this all-purpose President's Day, always on a Monday, because that will create more money for retailers. Oh, they wouldn't tell you that, of course. They would say, that's for convenience, so people can have a long weekend. Well, maybe there's some of that, but don't you think maybe just there's a chance that money-making entered into this? And this was in the Washington Times by Don Feder, I guess is how you say his name, F-E-D-E-R, Sunday, February 15th. And this is an opinion, of course. President's Day is a fraud. It's part of the left's ongoing campaign to elevate mediocrity, downplay or disparage our heroes, and erase U.S. history. We should be celebrating men such as George Washington, who gave us our country, and Abraham Lincoln, who saved it during the greatest crisis in our history. Instead, we have this meaningless mush called President's Day. Who are we honoring? Millard Fillmore, James Buchanan, or Joseph R. Biden? Most of our presidents are better off forgotten. Who wants to remember Lyndon B. Johnson's war on poverty, which made single-parent families the norm in the black community? Although Washington's birthday is still a federal holiday, sadly, Lincoln's birthday is not. The left has never been comfortable with either of these giants. Washington owned slaves, but so did Thomas Jefferson, the father of the Democrat Party. Even Lincoln, who freed the slaves, isn't popular on the left. His primary mission wasn't emancipation, but saving the Union. And I'll interject, that's according to the leftists, of course. Going on with the article, in reality, these towering figures prove the great man theory of history, that exceptional individuals, not impersonal forces, shape the course of history. Washington guided the nation for the first quarter century of his existence, first as commander of the Continental Army, and then as president. His steady hand brought us victory in our War of Independence. His support for a federal government helped replace the Articles of Confederation with one of the greatest documents ever written, the United States Constitution. At the end of the Revolutionary War, a group of his officers wanted to make Washington America's hereditary monarch. He wouldn't have it. The old general said he viewed the idea of making him a king with, quote, utmost horror and detestation, unquote. When news of this reached King George III, Britain's monarch called his former adversary, quote, the greatest man in the world, unquote. Lincoln's greatness was of a different sort. A lesser man would have allowed the southern states to secede in 1861. Lincoln had the strength of will to prevent it by force of arms. Through the long, bloody Civil War, as casualties mounted and the resolve of many in the North faltered, Lincoln remained steadfast. His monumental Gettysburg Address promised a war-weary people, quote, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth, unquote. Who knows what he might have accomplished in his second term if he hadn't been shot in the head by a Democrat. When I was a schoolboy, we learned these lessons well. Today, thanks to the radicals who control public education, they are all but forgotten. The war in American history extends far beyond Washington and Lincoln. It includes the man who might symbolically be considered the first American, Christopher Columbus. The left sees the Genovese sailor as a mass murderer and the die from which future colonial exploiters were struck. Altogether, 17 states and the District of Columbia celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day, another scam. Columbus undertook one of the greatest voyages in history, sailing approximately 3,100 nautical miles from Spain to the Bahamas, an amazing feat in the 15th century. He opened the continent to exploration and settlement. And I'm going to skip down a little bit in the interest of time. The war over our holidays is an integral part of the culture war. Celebrations of our traditional holidays help unite and define us as a people. You probably don't number among your ancestors an Italian sailor, a Virginia planter, or a man who was born in a log cabin. But we can all identify with the values and vision of the great men who shaped our nation. Why don't we let lefties have their own holidays so they will leave ours alone? They could celebrate the success of Joseph Stalin's first five-year plan, or woke sugar daddy George Soros's birthday. A hard-hitting article there. That was the Washington Times, written by Don Fetter, and it appears Sunday, February 15, 2026. And I'll just say, I think it's a sad fact that I noticed some of the counties in Maryland and probably elsewhere where several days were lost because of the snow and ice storm recently. They were going to use President's Day to make up some of the mistakes. And I have to wonder, I can't say this for a fact, but I have to wonder, do any of the schools even mention President's Day anymore? Do they even teach about Washington in a meaningful way? Or like, or Franklin D. Roosevelt, or Teddy Roosevelt, or other great men of the past? Thankfully, when I was in school, which was quite a few years ago, those things were honored. Those men were honored, and the women that supported them. And the great women, like Clara Barton, Florence Nightingale, and other great women of the past. But now, I have to say, I don't really know. I'm not in a school anymore, but I was in the Leighton from 1972, with a few years off, right up until the year 2020. I was a teacher. And I saw the gradual lessening from when I was in school to those last few years. Now, the last few years, I was privileged to teach in a small Christian school, which did honor a lot of these men and women and concepts. But sadly, a lot of the public schools, such things as patriotism are largely forgotten. No wonder students know so little. They can go out and protest, and when you ask them about what they believe in, they're hard-pressed to tell you anything. Well, let me get off my soapbox. Here's a little article about energy, and I heard something about this today on the radio. Again, from the Washington Times, Pentagon transports set to test next-generation mobile nuclear reactor. And this was by Ben Wolfgang. Dateline, the Washington Times, Sunday, February 15, 2026. The Pentagon on Sunday airlifted the next-generation mobile nuclear reactor from California to a facility in Utah, marking a key step forward in what the Trump administration has cast as a cutting-edge plan to deliver reliable energy at military facilities. The collaboration between the Defense Department and reactor maker Valar Atomics, that's V-A-L-A-R, Atomics, officials said is an example of the military following through on President Trump's directive to modernize the nation's nuclear energy landscape. And it gives some small details here, which I'll skip over. Pentagon officials said the airlift was the first piece of what will be a long process of logistical and technological testing. Here we have a quote. Today's activity aligns with a broader initiative to improve the speed, safety, and effectiveness of advanced nuclear reactor testing and to better understand the logistics, certification, and handling requirements associated with these systems, said Michael Duffy, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment on Sunday. And he went on for the Department of War to deploy transportable nuclear microreactors. Many logistics scenarios need to be tested through demonstrations like these to develop a robust understanding of the challenges involved. And jumping down, in May, Mr. Trump announced plans for a nuclear renaissance that called for quadrupling the nation's power output by 2050, including 300 gigawatts of net new capacity. 1 gigawatt of power can provide electricity to about 750,000 homes. For the military, reliance on diesel generators when deployed and local electric grids here at home, the same grids that serve the general public, is widely viewed as a significant national security threat. If those grids are compromised, either by a natural disaster, kinetic enemy attack, or cyber operation, military installations could be without power. Isaiah Taylor, the founder and CEO of the California-based company Valar Atomics, previously told the Washington Times that his firm is, quote-unquote, factorizing the production of small reactors. His company, Mr. Taylor said, will manufacture in its factories the kinds of reactors that could be used at military installations rather than the traditional decades-old approach of constructing large nuclear reactors on-site. To be dependent on everybody else's energy supply is very vulnerable. It's a dependency you don't want to have, he said in an interview last October. While the Navy has long used nuclear energy to power submarines, insiders say it's taken years for private industry and other arms of the military, to align on the broader goal of mobile ground platforms for nuclear energy. And Mr. Taylor told the Times, quote, that's really one of the reasons I started Valar Atomics. I realized there was a short window of time. We have to get this right. We need to have reactors on bases by 2028. And that requires a completely different pace of building than we've seen in the nuclear industry, unquote. And again, this was by Ben Wolfgang at the Washington Times on Sunday, February 15th. And we've got a couple of other articles here. One of my good buddies in Massachusetts sends me a lot of good articles, as I said before. A couple of them have to do with Don Lemon, Lamar. I guess he's going by the word Lemon now. One of them says, Lemon gets pinched. You got served Lemon ache. Frequently fired, former CNN anchor Don Lemon was arrested at a swanky Los Angeles hotel late Thursday for his role in a violent takeover of a Minnesota church service that left kids fearing that their, quote, parents were going to die, unquote, the feds charged. Federal agents with the Department of Homeland Security and FBI swarmed the cell the celeb-loved Beverly Hilton and took Lemon, 59, into custody in the elevator on Thursday night. Law enforcement sources told the Post. The anchor-turned-activist, who was in town covering the Grammy Awards, was one of four people arrested by federal agents in connection with the coordinated attack on City's Church in St. Paul, Minnesota, Attorney General Pam Bondi confirmed in a statement on Friday. The jackass journalist is accused of depriving the constitutional rights of parishioners when he joined dozens of anti-ICE agitators who interrupted a January 18 service after hearing that the pastor worked for the immigration agency. Well, we'll see what happens to Mr. Lemon. He apparently is no longer with CNN. And I forget why, but I think it has something to do with some kind of offenses. I should check that one out. Well, I want to thank you all for listening tonight. I hear our music coming on, which means our time is up. Again, you can write to me at Lou Carvalho, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thank you so much for listening. And tune in again next week. Good night.